This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we visit Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue, where we find Port Townsend's recently retired police chief has taken up a new career as his wife's sidekick on a mission to save injured birds of every feather. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Birding is my wife Monica's favorite pastime, so naturally that is what she chose for us to do all day on her birthday in mid-July. And so it was that we were out at Point Wilson towards the end of the day, taking turns gazing through the scope, trying to discern the identity of some bouncing specks on distant water, when we were approached by the fisherman. "There's a bird in trouble back there," he said, pointing back along the rocky shore, before quickly moving along, clearly feeling he had dispensed of his duty. We picked our way along the boulders in the direction he'd pointed, and sure enough, we soon came upon a black-and-white seabird struggling in the surf, trying to gain a purchase on the shore. It was a young common murre, Monica informed me. There was nothing visibly wrong with it, aside from the fact that it was floundering in the waves when it should have been serenely swimming far out on the water, occasionally diving for a fishy snack. We hurried over to the Marine Science Center to ask what we should do. There, a helpful intern gave us the phone number of Cindy Daly, the remarkable woman who, operating under the name of Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue, has for years dedicated almost every waking hour of her life to saving birds' lives. Daly told us to go back and catch the bird if we could, and she would send her husband to collect it. So, borrowing a large towel, we went back to the point where we found the murre now standing on a small stone beside a tidal pool, panting. With unexpected ease, I threw the towel over the trembling animal and scooped it up in my arms. When Daly's husband showed up to collect the patient, I was startled to recognize him to be Connor Daly, Port Townsend's recently retired police chief. And several weeks later, when I dropped by the Daly's modest house on Park Ridge Road out near the airport to check on the patient's progress, it was once again Connor Daly who greeted me at the gate. I asked him how he was enjoying his new career as a bird rescuer, but he quickly demurred, giving all the credit for the rescue operation to his wife, Cindy.
This is her due.
Okay.
She's the amazing one who makes all of this successful. To be here all day and get to see what she does just blows me away. She's amazing. Oh, and this last 2 years, she's just been overwhelmed.
With the number of
birds. She's done more birds so far this year than she did all last year. All last year.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
And we're only halfway done. Well, maybe I've reached a little past the halfway point, but still, I've done 150 birds this year so far.
And how many did you do all of last year?
147. And I'm up to like 151 this year already. I'm going to go set these down.
Okay.
In here. This is where, this is kind of the clinic that we built. We built it to be my bird center. But if we ever sell the property, then it's good to have it be a garage.
It's a garage. So it looks like this is recently completed, or is it?
Yeah, it was recently built. Uh-huh. And then you saw the enclosures out here.
Yes.
These are so basically in my house is like the critical area, and I'll show it to you. So obviously they're going to be in there with me, and then they can move out here to this clinic area once they're more stable, and then eventually outside to the hospital cages that you see here. Right. And then in the back we have flight cages. One can be opened up to be 56 feet long. So they have a nice area to fly in and get exercise and get. So there's like four stages here that they go through.
I guess it depends how badly injured they are, whether they ever go into the house, or does every bird like start in the house?
Everyone starts in the house because they're all, as soon as they come in, they are always in, I always treat them for shock and for dehydration.
I see.
So they go inside. I start tubing them with lactated ringers, and I add lots of goodies in there, you know, vitamins and iron and whatever they need. Sometimes antibiotics. It depends on what's wrong with them. Sometimes if it's a head injury, they're going to get a steroid to help reduce swelling. So, you know, they get some extra goodies in there. And once
are you a veterinarian? Or
I'm not. I'm not. I'm a licensed, I'm what they consider a licensed wildlife rehabilitator. So you apprentice, and then you take training, which I did, and I took a training course through the IWRC, which is the International Wildlife Rehabilitation Council, big name.
And where are they located?
They're a national organization. They started out of California. We have to continually get education every year for different classes in a whole array of things. You know, capture techniques, fecals.
Well, I guess different
parasites.
Species must have totally different requirements, too, in terms of defeeding.
I do all the birds, so you can imagine all of the information and knowledge that I need to do everything, every kind of bird, because, you know, it's from hummingbirds to eagles, and they all eat something different. They all have special requirements, as you said.
So you say that you've seen a real uptick in the number of birds. Is there any particular species you've seen more of this year?
This year I've been seeing a lot of cedar waxwings. So that's every year I see something. I'll see more of something or another. You know, it might be one year it was robins. I had a lot of robins come in. And then last year I saw a lot of rhinoceros auklets, the little seabirds. So, you know, every year you see something that is doing well, I guess you could say. They're producing well that year. They're having a lot of babies, and
maybe it's a good thing when you see a lot, because that actually means that the population is up.
Yeah, that's what I would think, yes.
You were saying on the phone that you've seen a lot of MERS in trouble this year.
Well, I think that I'm starting to get them in. I've got three now, you know, two more in addition to the one that you found. And these two are adults, and they came in starving. And also just in very poor condition. They're starving. They're in bad feather condition. You can tell that they've had a rough year. And I also try to follow what's going on, you know, in the waters. And I'm reading a lot about this warm water mass that's accumulating, you know, on our coastline. And they're attributing a lot of the problems that we're seeing in starving mammals, starving birds, all of these things due to the warming waters, algae blooms, possibly toxic algae blooms. So birds are not finding the food that is normally there. Fish are not where they're normally at. They're either deeper or further out where it's colder. If you follow all the news about that, it's very interesting. I mean, they're seeing what I've read. They're saying they're seeing sunfish up here where they would normally not be found. Whatever is going on out there, the result is that we're getting a lot of starving birds in. And I'm staying in touch with the lady who's down in Astoria, Oregon, and they've already seen more than 40 MERS starving coming into their facility.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, they're right there on the coast, so they're getting a lot more in than I am. But I'm sort of just getting prepared to expect possibly more and more seabirds coming in this year.
I have a friend who's up visiting from California. She lives in Southern California, and she says down there they've been seeing a lot of sea lion pups starving. And
right. That's what's been in the news. And even I was reading just yesterday that there's a whole bunch of whales that have been washing up in Alaska. They've had, I can't remember the numbers exactly, but more than usual.
So can we see the MERS that I brought in? Is it
absolutely.
You know, available for visiting?
Yeah.
Daly led me to the house to see the intensive care unit, a former spare bedroom now filled with incubators and cages.
Yeah, so this is my, what do you want to call it? My intensive care.
Wow, so this is like a
hospital incubator.
Yeah, an incubator. And you got little...
These are cedar waxwings.
Those are cedar waxwing
little
chicks?
Little baby cedar waxwings.
Oh my gosh. They think
are you guys hungry?
I guess
they're
so.
Always hungry. So these guys eat about every hour. They need to be fed for 12 hours a day.
For 12 hours a day?
Yeah, yeah. 10 to 12 hours a day is what the parents would be feeding them.
Oh, my gosh.
So I try to do that as best I can.
So a nest got knocked out of a tree or something?
Yes. In this case, their tree was completely cut down. So
Oh.
Their nest fell to the ground, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, and it couldn't be replaced. Normally we try to get them replaced. You know, if we can, we try to get the nest put back up, if you can.
Yeah, how many years have you been doing this sort of thing?
Well, I started 30 years ago. Something like 30 years ago.
Oh, so you...
But I have... So I did it in New Mexico for about 15 years, and then I came back here and did it for a while, and then I quit for a while, and now I've been doing it again for about 5 years.
Yeah. So you've nursed a lot of birds back to health and mothered, like, probably a lot of cedar waxwings. I mean, so how do you teach them to fly and things?
Well, thankfully, they already know how to do that. That's instinctive.
So
they flap their wings and they go. But I just try to provide them with the natural food that they would find out there. Like right now, they're eating a lot of blackberries. So I'm out there picking blackberries and bringing in insects that I can find out there and other berries and things that they would find and eat. And sometimes I cut the whole branch. You know, I'll cut the whole branch with the berries on it and haul it in. I'll show you. I have a little flight cage, and they can just pick them off themselves. So they learn to forage.
Oh, I see. So they learn that blackberries grow on, mm-hmm. on those nasty vines.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, good. Yeah.
I guess there's no way you can really, though, track your patients once they
right.
fly the coop. I mean, yes. once they're out there, they're just out there, and you don't know.
That's right.
How they fare.
That's right. I don't know if they're surviving. I can only hope that they are. I've certainly given them every opportunity to thrive. You know, they start out.
Do you ever band the birds? I mean,
I don't. But I know that when they leave, they're strong, they're healthy. And sometimes I'm sure they're probably at times more healthy than they are in the wild because they're getting a lot of food. That, you know, parents are doing the best they can too in providing, but you know, sometimes I'll get in youngsters that are pretty thin, whereas the ones that I'm sending out are pretty fat. But I have a lot easier time finding the food. I just have to pick up my phone and order from Amazon my mealworms. And I go through mealworms like you would not believe. I'm ordering, let's see, about 20,000 mealworms every week and a half.
So have you ever tried to get into the mealworm production business?
No, I have enough to do without having to raise food as well.
Right.
So frankly, I have to order it because I just don't have time. And I go through them so fast.
What do the mealworms cost you?
Well, fortunately, they're about $30 every 10,000 mealworms. So I'm ordering $60 worth every 2 weeks.
And where does the money for that come from? I mean, are you supported by some sort of grant? Or
no, it's coming out of our pocket, Connor and I. We spend a lot of our own personal funds to finance this. But I do rely on donations, and I do receive donations, and I'm always so grateful for them. And they do help. And without them, I don't know if I don't know how long I can sustain this, if you know what I mean. You know, we can't personally finance it forever. It's growing, as we talked about, and it's getting more and more patients are coming in. So I need to get out there and start doing a little more fundraising as well.
Well, now that Connor has retired, he is obviously working with you.
He is. He's the person. Great help, yes. So this is the guy that you picked off the rocks out there at Point Wilson, right there. That's the youngster.
Yeah, he's looking good.
And this guy, these two are the starving adults. And if I turn one around, baby, you will see. Look at the keel. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See how skinny they are? Baby. See the sharpness of the keel?
Yes.
Yeah. That should not be showing. That would not be prominent at all.
Well, no, they have a nice plate full of fish here, but they don't seem particularly interested at the moment.
Well, they did eat some. I can tell that some are gone. Yeah, they're getting there. Let me show you. Oh, it's okay, sweetie. So this, see the ends of the wing? See the tips? See how the feather condition was very poor? And see how he's got a little, the web between the toes
has been split
open? That's all wear and tear from just trying to survive. And living on the ocean is no easy business, as you can probably well imagine.
No, and he was being buffeted around by the waves. He was like up on the rocks at Point Wilson.
He had just had it. He was done. He was exhausted. He was starving. And, you know, so in such poor health that he couldn't even molt properly. So that's why his feathers look so bad. So now what I'm hoping to do is get him in better condition. I'm going to have him a while, obviously, because he needs to molt. He needs to get into better feather condition. And in the meantime, while he's doing that, I'm putting good nutrition into him, so he's gaining weight. And
is he even capable of flying at the moment?
No, he could not fly right now.
Right. Somewhat uncomfortable, you know, like housemates here.
Well, so, the honest truth is, you saw when we first walked in how they were all snuggled up together.
Oh, yes, that's
they really right. are very communal, and they want to be in a colony and be together. And so they actually do better when there's more than one. When I get one in, it's a little more difficult. So one starts eating the fish, the others go, oh, okay, we can do that too. There's the fish. That's right. That's what we need to be doing. So pretty soon you'll see them all eating. Which is a good thing, you know.
So now what we did when we found this bird was we got a towel out of the trunk of our car and went out and threw the towel over the bird and then thus wrapped up, carried it to the car, and we phoned you, got your phone number, and you came. And it turns out that was the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
Is that ever the wrong thing to do?
No, I don't think so. There's any time we see a stranded bird, there's usually something wrong. Seabirds are going to stay on the water unless there's a problem. If you see a bird that's out of the water, there's something wrong. Oftentimes, it can be that they're just not waterproof. And if you put them back in the water, they're just going to come out again. So it's best if you see one before it disappears, because oftentimes I get calls and then they're no longer where they said they were.
Right.
You know, throw a towel around them, wrap them up like a burrito, and stick them in a box or something and keep them safe and quiet. And then call me. I will then assess the bird. And if all it needs is just to be washed, perhaps it's got some contaminants on its feathers that need to come off so that it can be waterproof again. And then we can always just put it back out there if there's really nothing that much wrong with it.
Right.
But most of the time, 9 times out of 10, there's something wrong. If it's out on the sand, there's something wrong.
So let's talk about other kinds of birds, like songbirds. Every bird has to fledge at some point. Quite often, fledglings, you know, like land on the ground and they bumble around and they, you know, it takes them a while to really learn how to fly.
Yes.
So, obviously, you don't want people taking fledglings into you.
Right.
Or do
right.
you? I mean, like, you know, when should somebody worry about a fledgling?
Well, of course, the way that Mother Nature intended it, when they do fledge, you're right, they might spend a few days on the ground, four days on the ground before they're able to fly up and follow mom and dad around.
Right.
And at that time, they are very vulnerable to dogs, cats, kids, whatnot.
Right.
And so what we usually just try to suggest is, you know, because they can't take every fledgling in, if people could just keep their dogs and cats indoors for a couple of days, give the bird a chance, watch them and see if they don't fly off with their family. Just give them that extra time they need on the ground. They instinctively know to go and hide under something and try and stay out of sight. So that's the very best thing you can do. Now, if you suspect something's wrong, it's injured, you can tell sometimes if a wing is hanging a little different than the other side, then call me and, you know, we can do something about it. But for the most part, try to just give them the time that they need to go off with mom and dad, because being with their parents is the very best thing, of course, because I can't obviously do everything that they do for them. You know, it's important for them to spend time. Some of them migrate out of here with their whole flock, you know. It's good if they can stay together and leave with them.
Right. But I suppose that in your 30 years of doing this, you've had people bring you perfectly healthy fledglings.
Sometimes, yes, occasionally.
And when that happens, what do you do? Do you tell them to, like, return it to where they found it? And
yes. Yes. That's usually the best thing we can do is I get back in touch with them and they bring it back out there.
Right.
And let
okay.
it go. Uh-huh. Yeah. You want to see these guys get fed? Excuse me for 1 second. I have to get my forceps here.
Daly led me into a small adjoining bathroom that featured a cage covering half the floor, filled with small dark birds that set up a din of anxious twittering the moment we entered.
If you just want to stand like right behind me, I'll open this and they're going to come out, and then sometimes they come out on top of me here. They climb up my shirt.
So now how many swifts are in here?
So there's 8 boxes of swifts
boxes
in here.
Swifts.
Yeah. Which are, you know, what people would know as chimney swifts. And this particular group of birds came out of a nest that fell from a chimney and broke into a bunch of pieces. And they came to me about 6 weeks ago when they were still, their eyes weren't even open. And so I've been taking care of them ever since, so you could see that they really enjoy it. Now you know why I go through so many mealworms, you can see.
They're all, I can tell.
They're all gobbling. Well, they all want to be fed, so they're...
So for our listeners...
And I do this every hour.
Several of the swifts are clinging to her shirt.
There are. And they're all, you know, just trying to get ahead of the other guy to get fed. Now, they also are practicing their flying, and that's a good thing because I'm trying to get these guys ready to go.
Well, it looks like this one is ready to go.
Yeah, they're all flying really well, right. And it's time for them to go. I'm going to introduce them into a colony in PA, but there's a church up in PA that have quite a few of these guys. And so the idea is I'm going to take them up there, and I'm going to let them go probably in the evening at dusk, just as they're returning from their day's flight, you know. These guys will join them and go in and roost that night and hopefully pretty, you know, in no time at all become part of that colony, which will, in September, get ready to migrate south. And they have to go with them.
Whoops.
Yeah, so you just have to be careful
not to step
anywhere because you have to stay real still in where these guys usually head on their migration route is down into Portland, Oregon, where there's a huge congregation of these guys in September. They, on their route, that's where they head. They've had as many as 35,000 of them.
Wow.
Entering this big, like a steam pipe, I think it is, in the school. And people come from all over to watch them do that, to enter and leave. Oh, so after I feed them, as you see, they see how they fly straight up? That's them, imagine, flying up the chimney.
Right.
And they all, as soon as one starts, they all go. So this is my life. What do you think?
I think it's a good life.
So I don't know if your listeners realize we have eight swifts.
Eight
all
swifts.
All flying around our heads.
Yes, in a bathroom that's about like 5 feet by 5 feet, I would say.
So I'm just going to gather them up here so we can open the doors and leave. So since you're following me around, you could see I go from one cage or enclosure to another, and this is what I do all day long. I go and I feed the swift. Then I feed these.
Aside from Connor, do you have any help? I mean, do you have any other volunteers who come here and help you?
I do have a couple of people, yes, that I have helping. So, but and at this busy time of year, this is pretty much all I do all day long. Crazy, huh? But we do try to take breaks every now and then and get out in our kayaks or go somewhere. Connor gets me out away from the baby birds for an hour. But when I have critical patients like I do right now with these MERS, I'm kind of on it. I'm always, you know, on task, if you know what I mean. I'm here tubing them and just sort of coaxing them along. Don't want to lose them. They just need a lot of care right now. A lot of attention. Connor, you want to come out with us and show them the eagles we're taking care of right now? So Connor has become my first volunteer now that he's retired. he's probably got more work now than he ever did before.
But I get more pleasure out of it.
I'm keeping him busy, believe me.
It's fun to be around animals. Like until we moved up here, the only eagle I ever saw was in a zoo. And now I have two eagles, so it's just amazing.
So this is 56 feet long, and it can be one cage or it can be two. And right now we've got it divided into two. Oh, what's next?
Ooh.
Oh, there we go. So that is a youngster that came in from where, Connor? Again, over by North
Discovery, South Discovery Road.
Okay, so he just came out of the nest too early, was starving, full of parasites, and just needed a helping hand, basically. And now the youngster has a model to follow and be an example for him,
right,
which is great. And he just hangs out with the adult. I mean, he's always right up against him, next to him.
I imagine it's kind of dangerous handling eagles. I mean, they have sharp talons, and
yeah,
I mean,
you have to know what you're doing. I mean, they're not as bad as you might think, because they're heavy birds. They don't necessarily go back on their back and, you know, use their talons. So the idea, if you find one, is, and most people don't want to try and capture them themselves, so they call Connor and I, which we're happy to go out and do for them. Basically, what we do is we throw a heavy blanket over their heads and push them down, and then they can't really, you know, they can't see you to bite you. So right. That's the safest way.
I gather, Connor, you serve as the eagle handler. No,
she's the eagle handler.
Oh, is that right?
You should see her.
I'm the eagle herder.
I can herd it over to her.
I tell him, okay, you go that way, and yeah, push the eagle my way, and then I can grab him.
Now, is there a problem with habituating these birds?
No, I think that they instinctively know to stay away. They're scared. They're like, nope, leave us alone. We don't want any part of you.
I was once at a wild bird show. I mean, there was this group of people who had like all sorts of birds of prey, mm-hmm. and they said there was a problem with habituation. I mean, that some of the birds they had couldn't be released because they thought they were people.
They're talking about really young, probably.
Right.
These two are old enough that they know better, and I don't have to worry about that. Right. But yeah, babies, you would have to be careful with, of course, and not let them get so used to you and associate you with food. So yes, in that case, it can be a problem.
Like, I think those Vox's swifts, you know, if they see you walking past their chimney, they're going to come and cling to your blouse.
You know, I don't think they will. I think once they've had the taste of freedom, they're gone. They're out of there. Yeah.
I spent a couple of hours talking with the Dailies and meeting their many patients and residents. Among them were a number of birds, like a raven that had been taken from its nest and raised to think he was human, and birds of prey that would never fly again, that Daily takes to schools and other venues for educational purposes. It was clear that both Dailies were proud of the facility they had built, with its intensive care unit and the many modular 8-foot cubic wooden cages that can be configured to make enclosures of different sizes. And they spoke excitedly of a $4,000 grant they had received recently from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife to build two new enclosures that would feature 300-gallon filtered pools for the rehabilitation of aquatic birds like the common murre we had found. Near the end of my visit, we had this conversation.
Some people think I'm a little nutty. I'm sure. But, you know, it's a passion for birds. It's a love of birds.
So it sounds like you could use some help.
I'm really particular. I have to be. You know, I need people who are reliable, and I, you know, you get a lot of people who want to do it, but maybe aren't quite the right people to do it, if you know what I mean. So it's a hard thing to find help. It's, you know, it's not just I want to be around them and get close to them. It's the reality of this is cleaning cages and cleaning a lot of poop and dealing with worms and dead mice and dead rats and gross things. You know what I mean? And just scrubbing and cleaning. You know, it's not very glamorous at all.
Now, if somebody were interested in doing this and interested in doing it
learning
professionally themselves, mm-hmm. are you qualified to, like, actually train people so that they would eventually be able to get their own license?
I imagine so, because they have to apprentice just like I did.
Right.
So
right.
Someone would have to apprentice to someone like myself.
Have you had any apprentices?
I have not. No, I have not. No.
Would you consider it?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Sure. Yeah. So, again, you know, they'd have to get a hold of me and we'd have to talk.
In order to contact Cindy Daly and Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue, phone 360-379-0802. That number again is 360-379-0802. Or you can look up Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue on Facebook. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans. We'll be right back.